Welcome to The Germinates. I'm Reverend Judy Hosner, and I invite you to sit back and spend a few moments with us as we share some music and dialogue with you. Welcome, everyone, to The Journey 8, and that was a young lady by the name of Jokia Williams. She was sent to me by her manager a couple months ago, and the song is called Amen. The album's called Amen. It's on iTunes, and let me tell you, when this young lady latches onto a good producer and recording studio, she is going to be gone. And I hope that happens for her. She's got a beautiful voice. Okay, Ryan, are you there?
I am here and I am ready.
Woo-hoo! Okay, we're together, yay! Okay, I am Reverend Judy Hosner.
And I'm Ryan Duncan. But it's all about you, Judy.
It is not about me. Okay, it's all about me. Tonight, we're going to focus on the first of several parables during the next few months that we're picking. And by all means, call us if you have a favorite one at Ryan.
Oh, at 888-627-6008.
That's right. That's a direct line into the studio, and the engineer will definitely patch you through. We want to talk to you. Tell us what your favorite parable is. Okay, so that's where we're going, and we're going to talk about a little mustard seed and a little leavening or yeast, and we'll see what we can make. And of course, I'm letting Ryan go first.
Aha. Very so, kind of you. Ladies should go first, so I like that you're letting me go first.
Because I'm not a lady? Is that what you're saying? No, I can't believe it. Oh. A Christian show.
I would never say that to your face, Judy.
I know you wouldn't. It's what you say behind me that worries me.
No, we're okay. Both very good Christians here.
Yes, we are.
We would not.
And we want you to listen to us. We want you to listen to us. We want you to call us at that wonderful number, 888-627-6008. Now, before we start, I want to take a moment to say that in the past couple of weeks, and I think I said this maybe at the last show, been made aware of three very close friends who are struggling with cancer of one sort or another. And it's made me think of all the fussing and feuding we've been encountering lately. And I've really tried since the last show, last 2 weeks, to put that behind me, even when I've been tempted by the devil to say something when someone says something really stupid like, my daughter's pregnant. I don't think she knows who the father is. I said I would take the baby as long as it wasn't mixed. Now I just held my tongue as the good preacher I am, and a plethora of things ran through my mind. But I said, well, we shall find out now, shall we? Yeah. People say silly things like that. Anyway, so I'm trying, and I hope you are too, to make this earth something we can bear no matter what craziness happens in the White House. No, I didn't say that. What craziness happens, period, in the White House. Oh God. Okay, for all you 12 people that are listening, don't hang up on us. We'll get better as the night goes on. I know we will. Okay, so Ryan is going to take the controls. And first of all, we're making the assumption there's a couple of you out there that don't know what a parable is. So we're going to do a little educating tonight and try and put some pizzazz in it so you don't fall asleep at the wheel. So I can see it now. Car's upside down. The radio station's on Journey 8. And both of us get arrested for whatever. All right, Ryan.
But you will know by the end of tonight what a parable is.
Yes.
So that's what we're hoping to do.
Even though you might be mangled and dead, you'll know what a parable is. All right. So I'm letting you take it. You got the wheel, baby.
All right. So a parable, just think of it as a fable. It's a short story that is very simple in design, and it's meant to communicate a spiritual truth, a religious principle, or a moral lesson of some sort. It's generally very precise and short. And it's done that way so that it can illustrate something really complex in a very simple and straightforward way. So, for example, Jesus used the parables to teach his people and the disciples in particular, but he used agrarian language. You know, he talked about mustard seeds and farming things because he was speaking in the language that people would understand. So that's the purpose of a parable. So as, for example, Paul might write an entire letter that's talking about one specific thing, and Jesus would use a very short parable that was just a few sentences long to illustrate the same thing. So parables are important for us as Christians because for me anyway, they're the most accessible source of wisdom that we have from all of the scriptures because it's meant to be digested pretty quickly and it's meant to be read over and over again. If you notice when you read it, at different times in your life, it'll say something different to you. It'll mean something different. And I think that's part of the design of what a parable is. It allows you to get the spiritual wisdom out of it that you're able to understand at that moment. And as you gain more wisdom yourself and more knowledge, you will understand a parable at a deeper level. And as a member of the UCC, we believe God is still speaking. And I think because of the design of parables, that it speaks very clearly for all of us today in a more accurate way. So, for example, I spend a lot of time as a seminary student doing exegesis, trying to study what the Bible says and what it means, and trying to interpret it for myself. And so you have to understand the original language, ancient Greek, and you have to understand the historical context of where everything is happening and the political situation and what everything's going on. So there's a lot of information that you need to understand for the Bible to really make sense if you're looking at it for authentic, like universal truth. And a parable is much more straightforward because you don't need all that to get the kernel of truth out of it. So that's what a parable is. And that's why I think it's important. Judy, feel free to jump in before
I'm jumping.
Oh, you're jumping in.
I'm jumping. Yeah, no, I just wanted to tell you I was jumping. I don't have anything to say. As he's trying to drink his Coke. No, I think the important thing is to remember the audience, you know, he was speaking to fishermen, right. Farmers, like you said. These people were uneducated in that time and place. So, you know, you have to speak just like we as preachers do today. You have to speak to the people you're talking to in a language without talking down to them that they understand. And that's where the stories come in. And I'm done.
And that incidentally is why art was so important to the early church and to the medieval church as well. And why stained glass was so important because you would have an image and you can get a lot of information from a simple image. And it's the same principle. It's simple information. And if you notice the parables, they tend to be very visual. there's a mustard seed, or there's a penny. It's very simple. So I'm going to go ahead and read the scripture. We're doing the mustard seed, which is Matthew 13, verses 31 and 32. He put before them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed that someone took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all the seeds, but when it is grown, it is the greatest of shrubs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches. So that's what we're going to talk about as I lose my voice. Feel free to call in at 888-627-6008. And I'm talking to all of my friends who I believe are listening. Please call in and we'll have discussion.
We have faith that you're listening to us.
We do. And I have $5 that I will give you if you call in.
Bribery.
Did I just bribe somebody? Yes,
oh,
I did.
On the radio. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, he's got $5. I have none. I'll let him do these.
So let us talk about the mustard seed, and we'll see if anybody wants to join us in the conversation.
All right.
So the mustard seed is the smallest of seeds. And in the parable, it talks about how it can become the largest of plants, which is a really beautiful and wonderful story if you think about it. As people, often we feel so small and so insignificant, unable to make change. And if you become the mustard seed, then you can become this glorious plant. And you can have nests of birds, which means you can shelter and protect and do all kinds of things that you can't do today, because we are never in our full fruition of God. We're never at what God expects us to be at our totality. We're never at the peak of what we're called to be. We can always be more. And I find that really reassuring, because with God, we can become something greater than ourselves. And now I'm getting back to Transfiguration Sunday, which was yesterday. And I spent a lot of time preaching, talking about the transfiguration of the church and how it's changing. And I feel like a lot of people are really hopeful that the world can be better than what it is today. And this is a parable that tells you, yes, that's true, that we can become more than ourselves, that the world can change and become better as we become better with it. Go ahead.
And that's a very important concept, you know, because you're thinking about this teeny weeny little seed. I don't know if you've ever seen a mustard seed, but I mean, it's small. You have to actually submerge it in some water or something so that you got some kind of
context,
because to just hold it is, you know, is not going to do it. So yeah, cool. Keep going, my dear.
Oh, okay. So, but it also talks about the kingdom of God. So I see the mustard seed in as more of like a personal growth kind of thing. But if you want to talk about the kingdom of heaven that's talked about in this parable, then that's another important element to this parable. And I really think, or I see the kingdom of heaven as being God's beloved people. It's a community. Some people talk about the kingdom of heaven being the church or the early church. And I don't see it in institutional ways like that. I see it more as this beloved community that's called by God to be the church, to be loving, to be good, to be kind. And this is a way of telling the early Christians that they can flourish under their own power because they're meant to be something grand and beautiful. And they may not see it yet, but God sees something more in them. And in that being more, there's where justice can be. So I'll bring in Isla a little bit. So that's where justice can be. So yes. We've spent a lot of time recently talking about how terrible the world is and how all this horrible stuff is happening, all this wickedness is running rampant. And this parable of the mustard seed is a really good antidote to that, because we can make change. We can make a difference in our environment, in our institutions that we're a part of. We can change the church and we can change the world as we allow God to change us, like God changes the mustard seed.
Good idea. I like that. Where'd you get that from? I really
got
like
that. From ILIF. That's the Theological School in Denver, Colorado.
Woo-hoo.
If you're interested, you can go to the website at...
Go ahead.
At ILIF.edu.
ILIF being I-L-I.
F-F. Dot
F-F. Great school. Great school. They're bringing people together that are learning to think and not just memorize things by rote memory. And I like it.
It's all right. Stuff.
What else you got to say, Mr. Ryan?
What else do I have to say? Okay. I keep waiting for somebody to call so that we can have a debate about the kingdom of heaven.
Will you people please call us? 888-627-6008. If money doesn't do us, tell us what you need within 27 cents. That's all I have in my pocket.
I think we should move on to yours and tie them in together.
Okay.
They work.
Well, I think we'll use the next music, Mr. Engineer. This is a song Selah did several years ago. And you probably remember the Josh Groban version of it, but Selah did a really nice version of it too, and it's called You Raise Me Up. Bad, I came in too soon. See, I never took a broadcasting class, and therefore my timing gets a little askew. All right, so that was Selah. For those of you who don't know who Selah is, they are a cornerstone trio. Been singing since the 90s. They're still singing today and making hits. And they've got like a zillion Dove Awards and I don't know how many other awards. But they're one of my favorite groups. And I'm glad that, Ryan, you picked out that song. If nobody likes it, you can contact Ryan at ryan.duncan
at minister.com.
But anyway, it's a very good song. All right. So now we're going to talk about the second half of this dual parable. And it's about an unnamed woman who takes enough leavening, in fact, it says three measures, and puts it in to about 3/8 of a barrel of meal. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but when you're talking about yeast or leavening, that's a lot. So 3 seda or measures would be like 39 liters, okay, or slightly more than a bushel. Thus, a little leaven added to the large quantity of meal permeated the entire mixture. And voila, when the bunny rabbits come out, when the bunny rabbits come out of the hat, the leaven disappears in the meal. And that's the important thing. The second important thing. The first important thing is the story, the parable goes that the woman hid the leavening. In other words, no one knew she put it in there. We don't know the motivation other than she was moved by God to do this. So the yeast gets all mixed up with all this meal, working secretly, of course, and invisibly. After the time, the results were visible. You have meal with leaven in it, which is dough, basically, I guess. In my words, and I'm not a cook, so don't hold me. So the concept here, and the reason why these two parables are taught together, is that, first of all, you talk about the fact that the growth of the kingdom of heaven was extensive when you're talking about the mustard seed. Extensive, big, external. You see this bush with branches on it big enough to make nests in and stuff. That's a big herb bush. When you're thinking of herbs, I mean, you think about rosemary and all the other ones, and they're, you know, little plants that you plant. Mustard, the teeny weeny little mustard seed grows into this huge, and I encourage you to look up a picture of a mustard seed bush. It'll just drive you crazy. And that's my problem, you know. So when you're talking about the parable of the mustard seed, you're talking about extensive, external, you know, visual. But when you teach the parable, excuse me, of the leaven or the of yeast, now you're talking about something internal, invisible. She hid it in this whole barrel of meal, not to make some big tree or anything. So you have external, very visible, internal or intensive, inside a barrel of meal that was hidden until it mixed all together. Now, why would that go together, you ask? And I'm glad you did. You can ask me by calling me at
888. You're waiting for me. 888-627-6008.
Yes. So when you take the parable of the leaven and the power, think about it. It changed regular old meal into something completely different. So the power of the gospel of the kingdom has changed the whole world. Think about it. Or yeast rolls. Okay, we're not, but you know, the concept being that here you have a group of people or a community or however you want to define the kingdom principle here on earth. And we are, or have in the past when we were first involved with Christ, we were secret. We were hidden because we were afraid for our lives. So we had to be hidden and we had to be secret. But the word, the gospel, still had to reach people's hearts and had to mysteriously spread until the power influences. Well, look how the church grew in just the first 500 years. You know? So when I think about these two stories and I think about the leaven or the yeast, each Christian has to spread the gospel and let his light shine in his or her way. And that's where the hidden truth is. You can read the Bible, which I encourage you to do so. You can read textbooks and stuff. But when it comes to actually taking what you have inside and turning that into your story or your gospel, that is a magic transformation that happens between you and Christ. Am I not true?
That's exactly right. You are exactly right. I mean, that's what yeast does with bread. It helps it rise.
Right.
And there's this alchemical, magical process that happens when the two things are put together that make it do something, the rising, that it wouldn't do on its own. And that's a really good analogy for a human being being changed and transformed by Christ. We rise and we become something else entirely.
And although we keep reaching for what we consider the perfect, the reality is here on earth, we do what we can do when we've opened our ears and our eyes to the message of Christ. We do what we can do, and we also do what we think we cannot do. And that's the magic or the mystery of Christianity. And I'm not going to thump Bibles or, you know, have an altar call or anything. I wonder how an altar call would work on a radio station.
Well, people would have to call first. I would.
Yes, they would. At 888-6-something-something, 627-6008. So, you know, one of the things I want y'all to keep in mind is you have this little mustard seed, and I encourage you to look the picture up in your Encyclopedia Britannica or whatever you have. And you have this person, unidentified, who hides leaven in a barrel or a bushel of meal. We don't know why she did it. We can speculate that God told her, but I don't think it's that high. I think there was another reason, maybe, you know, her family was very hungry and, you know, couldn't afford to buy the meal or something. You don't know. God, somebody's on the line. Hang on. I think we have a caller. Was that what you were telling me, Mr. Engineer? Yes. He says we have a caller. Oh, look at Ryan Duncan, station number one. Reply. BBS radio station number one, Ryan Duncan. I don't know what that means. I'm really stupid when it comes to broadcasting, and I apologize for my inept ability. It was too many years. Oh, Ryan Duncan. You'll have to say the name a little bit slower because it sounds like Ryan Duncan when it comes through. That's, I think, what he's trying to do. Mustard seed. Okay. It's telling me I need to pronunciate things clearer. But with my sore throat, I'm lucky that I don't sound like a, you know, garbage disposal. So anyway, I want you all out there, all 12 of you that are listening. Okay, 13 of you to, you know, do a little song and dance with this. You know, go look at a picture in a science book or something, and then think about this concept of sneaking. You know, my engineer is incorrigible. I was just, you know, after all these years, I never know what kind of messages are going to flash across my screen. We have this, I don't know, whatever it's called, messaging or whatever. Did you see the messages, Ryan?
No, I do not see the messages.
Ah, that's why he's playing with me, because he's telling me things that you can't see. Okay, now he's going to start with you. So beware. Where could you get a Christian radio show? I'm asking you all this. With so much fun and still something concrete, at least we think it is. I don't know what anybody else thinks. You know, where would you do that? Other shows are just so lofty. You know, so matter of fact or whatever you want to say. the whole concept with BBS radio is they let me be the crazy person I am. They've never stopped me. And for that, that's awesome. I don't get censored unless it's really necessary, which I can't imagine a pastor being censored. I'm sorry, Judy, you have to take a 10-minute timeout. And that's why Mr. Ryan has come aboard to save me from me. And I think we make a good pair. We should get married. That won't work. But what a fun time. I couldn't wait to tell your mom. That would be awesome.
Well, that's one way to get her to call into the show.
That's right, Mom. Call in. Pick up that phone. All right. So, yeah, that's kind of where we're at. Ryan, save me. My voice is leaving.
Oh, your voice. See, you and I are both sick. I have been sick for 2 weeks. And we can sit here till we're blue in the face and talk about how we understand parables and what we think it means. But the real purpose and the thing that I enjoy is being able to help someone else discover the meaning of a parable for themselves. So I try really hard not to insert myself all over everything, because it's not me. It's about you and your understanding of the Bible. So it's helpful to give you tools so that you can help yourself read the Bible and understand it. And I'm here to help do that, and that's what I want to do. But I don't want to tell you what the Bible means, because I don't know any more than anybody else, scholar or theologian or otherwise. So I don't want to do that. And am I right, Judy, that that's kind of our goal, is to be somewhat entertaining and to be authoritative and educational, but not say that we have the right answer, because we don't. Because there are multiple answers. If you have looked at the Bible at all, you will come to learn pretty quickly that there are many, many valid interpretations of the Bible, and many different interpretations that are just as good as anybody else's. So it really comes down to you. And that's what's important about the parables that we both talked about. When you're reading a parable, you are involved in it. You are an active player in it. The parable doesn't stand alone. It's meant for you. And it's up to you to decipher what it means. And so you can't take yourself out of the equation when you're looking at the Bible. There isn't an ultimate one truth. I really don't believe in that. And so it's important for you as the reader to be able to look at it and understand it for yourself.
Well, and if there was a one truth, we wouldn't have as many versions of the Bible that we have. We wouldn't have as many denominations church-wise if there was only one truth. Now, there is one truth, and that, you know, there is one God, and, you know, he is holy. But the story, you know, I'm going to say something that if this doesn't get somebody to call in, I just don't know what will. But many theologians, and including myself, believe the Bible is more of a guidebook. It is holy. It is, you know, it's all that it's said to be. But there's a growing, and has been for years, feeling that the Bible should be used as a textbook. I'm telling you some parables because I want to teach you a lesson about fill in the blank. And some people that get caught up, and it's okay if this is, you know, for them, get caught up in the reading and the memorizing and all that stuff, might miss the underlying story, you know, might miss what's really being said. Now, if that didn't get anybody to call in, I just don't know what will. but, you know, if you take stories like the parables, all whatever number you want to pick, you take stories like the 99 sheep, which is a parable, and you say, well, I can think of those sheep as my classroom, my kids in the class. You know, I mean, you can make it 21st century. Don't think it has to be boring. It's only boring if you make it boring, right, Ryan?
That's right.
I mean, now, obviously, we're, you know, we're on a different path than many people in that, you know, we've chosen to follow the professional end of being a minister. But I'm going to tell you this, and it's in Timothy, everyone is a minister.
Amen.
So, you know that what we teach you on the show, in the process of having a bunch of fun, is to try and get you to come back, but come back on different terms. Mm-hmm. You know, the church as an establishment may have hurt you. The church may have rejected you, or you may have grown up a non-churched person. And, you know, your concept is nice for everyone else. Our job, our task that we've taken on, is to try and get you to understand that there can be fun in this. It's actually fun to be a Christian sometimes. I mean, the food alone at the church is just, you know, worth it. the potluck dinners and the spaghettis and the, you know, whatever. But, you know, I spend a lot of time, and I know Ryan does too, working on ways to reach you, to grab a hold of you and say, come on, just walk a couple feet at first. Okay, now let's go around the block, and so on and so forth. And we're not here to guilt trip you. Ryan, you haven't been guilt tripping anybody, have you?
Not today.
Not today, okay.
Not today.
So as of today, we're we're not here to guilt trip you. We're not here to make you feel less than. We're not here. We're here to have fun with you and to talk in some way, shape, or form seriously about whatever the topic is. And you always have the ability to email one of us and say, you know, I'd like for you to talk about fill in the blank. And we'll do our best.
I want you to talk about how spiritualism and Christianity are so close and yet distinct, and why, and is there some bridge between the two?
There is a bridge between the two. You know, when I look at somebody who's spiritual, who has a contact with the other side, and that other side could be envisioned as whatever. You know, we envision it as God, but, you know, there's many light forms and forms that the power takes. That's spiritual. Christianity is a definition of a community, a thought process. And although we consider ourselves spiritual, of course, people who are in other realms of the psyche, shall we say, are still spiritual and have connection to
but
God.
But spiritualists all think they are God or are unique, that they can qualify to be that aspect. Why?
Because there is a faction that say God lives within them, and therefore they are a part of God. Now, we look at
that's almost pantheist. That's almost like there's a pantheist understanding that says God and everything is one because it's made up like
exactly.
There's clay. You're part of the clay if it molds you, kind of like a octopus with all these legs, and you're the Kermit the Frog Muppet thing that goes on one leg, but you're still made up on the octopus. That kind of idea is, but
is
that spiritualism? What is that? Is that what? That's, does that have any context in this?
I don't know. Ryan,
I always think of spiritualism, the term, as being more of like a mediumship. You're trying to connect to spirits instead of the divine. So that's how I think of spiritualism. And then there's also the spiritual but not religious crowd who are spiritual, but they don't invest in institutional church, which is a different thing. So I think most people in America would say they're spiritual, but they may not be religious.
Isn't it interesting how nobody's really defined what spiritualism is? Come on, well, we might be the first. I mean, everybody wants to define consciousness and science and whatever big word you want to talk up. But nobody wants to define spiritualism. And in many ways, that is the a conundrum to me, because I don't know how that can, you know, how do you define? Yes, okay, well, okay. You say, well, a person believes he can connect with spirit, and then they're a psychic. They're a psychic. Does that mean they're spiritual?
Right.
Mm-hmm. What's spiritual?
They can be.
What's spiritual?
Absolutely.
What is spiritual?
Spiritual, in a closed, short little definition, is whenever you move out of yourself and connect with another, I don't want to say form, another, help me, Ryan.
Okay. I mean, spiritual is just being able to connect to something outside of ourselves. We don't really know what spirit is. We don't know if it's divine or if it's something in nature, which is why it's hard to define, because we can't define spirit itself.
It helps us connect with things outside of ourselves. That's almost scientific, because you just threw a science thing into it, let's say an idea. You know, because, you know, so many ways we could say there's energy that participates with you and I, and we know what we could see.
Right.
If you and I could see beyond the 1% of the visible spectrum, you know, the other 99 that's all the way through to who knows where, we'd see us melding on multiple ways. Just take acid. You know that. And light principles, light's folding between us. So, but, you know, the idea of connecting and adding that to spirit, I don't know. I've always had a conundrum, as like I say. What is spiritualism?
And that's a good thing to be stuck on, really. I mean, I'm not making fun. It is a good thing, because it is causing you to sink. And spiritualism for you is not going to be the same as spiritualism for the person sitting next to you, because their whole context of...
I'm taking it further. I want spiritualism becomes a religion. I want to have tax benefits. I want to buy up land and, you know, do spiritualism.
Well,
what do you think of that?
I'll start a 501c for you. How's that? If you raise money for me doing this, hey, you know. But in all honesty, the best way I can explain, and that's why I never poo-poo other shows, whether they're psychic or, you know, what they're, because at some point we still connect somewhere on that line, you know, we connect, whether, you know, whether it's just in principle or what, you know, because again, it's very powerful. And when you really get involved, and I'll send you an email with lots of books to read. When you really
be a religion,
it is.
What is
going
a religion? The belief system outside of all other religions.
Well, you know, the word religion. Okay, Ryan, you're the student.
Don't do that. It's to relive, to bring something together.
Right.
So. Yes. Religion is meant to bring us closer to God, bring us to the divine.
So with
with
an idea of all is one, one is all, sort of a pantheist nature, right?
Yes. Yeah.
It would almost be, you know, because for me, I'm all, just with what little I've experienced and with a lot I've experienced, it almost seems to me like they're defining themselves in that sort of a manner. And in that way, it would be a religion unto itself. Nobody's really looked at it that way. I mean, you know, it's funny. You see people that create so many different churches. Look at church that Hubbard created?
Scientology.
Yeah. Oh, Scientology.
Right.
Yes.
But you see what I mean? It's almost on that level. And yet everybody talks about it. They want to integrate it. They don't really people partition it off or make it mean what they think it means. But on so many aspects, all I've ever seen from all of them, they seem to agree on one thing. You're me and I'm you. We're all one at some level.
Well, we're not all one.
That's the difference between spiritualism and maybe we aren't at this point, but yet maybe we're all in the same clay.
We're all in the same family, though. We're all children of God. Yeah. I think we are.
But what if what if God's the clay? All of the clay. You're just like,
that's quite possible.
You're like the grain of sand on a beach that goes infinitely forever, but you're just the grain of sand in the clay that goes on infinitely forever.
And that's a good vision.
That would contrast with, and here's the strange part about the future. I believe you're going to see some sort of a, and there has to be this way because people are moving along this sort of an understanding in my mind that I see because everybody purports it and spiritualism believes that. You're going to have to see a marriage between Christianity on some level and a spiritual philosophy that takes pantheism as an understanding on some level. It's going to be interesting to see how it all folds together.
Absolutely.
But either the religion of Christianity is going to die, or it's going to embrace some momentum on that word that's become so important, so meaningful, so all-encompassing. So what does it really mean? You get my point?
Yes, I do.
I took you guys too far, and I love doing this. That's why you should just say, who is that guy?
That's why we call ourselves progressive Christians. It's a rather new branch of Christianity that is moving towards those lines of, we think, Ryan, help me here. We think in not different terms, but it is different terms.
It is different. I mean, I think in a different term even from you. I have a different framework. I'm much more, in many respects, interfaith in my approach than you are.
Yes.
And I don't just bring Christianity into my spiritual life. I bring paganism and Eastern religions with me as well, and Sikhism and all this stuff.
Well, I just touched you between the forehead with my pointing finger on my right hand. Did you feel it?
Actually, I felt it. Well, that was great. I want to do that again. Stick with us, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. And I'll see you on Wednesday, Mr. Ryan.
Mm-hmm. It'll be the Lenten season when we see you next.
Yes.
And do remember that we will all be praying for you until we see you again.
Yes. God bless you.
Thank you so much for spending time with us this evening. Please come back again. And remember, be kind in all you do, and the kindness will come back to you. Grace and peace, Reverend Judy Hosner.